Listen to them, Nightshade. Do you hear their words? They killed the only family you've ever known.
Nightshade fought to ignore Sister Datura, to break the stranglehold they had on each other. But her sister fought harder.
They destroyed your village. First Bulrush dies, then this? Whose blood is that on their war shirts? Listen to them. They boast of it.
The brightly painted war canoes glided close to the mint-bearded shores of Cahokia Creek. The air had become tainted by a bluish tint of smoke from cook fires and heating smudges. Word had already spread, and hundreds had come running from the outlying cornfields to line the bank and watch the return of Badgertail.
Ha! I killed 7 men and took 3 women. I'll have sons there next winter.
Nightshade knelt in the middle of the lead canoe, her bound hands dangling numbly behind her back. The stench of the warriors packed around her made her stomach roil. Odors of blood, urine, and torn guts bombarded her. She tried to hold her breath, but the effort only heightened the presence of Sister Datura in her body. The colors of the river began to swirl together, blue melting into brown in curling stringers, then going green and pale yellow before leaping up again to coalesce into sky, plants, or earth. Against Nightshade's will, Sister Datura plucked the hues of sunset from the clouds and cast them down like liquid jewels on the waves eddying around the boat. She shoved her way to the lip of the canoe, shouldering aside 2 warriors so she could vomit into the churning river. She hung there, weakly suspended between water and sky like a banished god, her body trembling.
Now you pay the price for our sacred dance. Feel the pain, Nightshade? I'm still here. Still here.
The warriors around her watched her with strained eyes. Though Nightshade tried to pull herself up, to bring her head back into the boat, her muscles refused to obey her commands. She braced her knees against the hull, feuding with her body. But she only succeeded in tumbling half out of the canoe. Her long hair spilled into the water, swirling just below her face in writhing serpentine patterns. With her hands tied behind her back, she did not have the leverage necessary to rescue herself.
Help me. Help me, someone.
Warriors frantically pushed each other to get away, eager to avoid having to touch her spirit-possessed flesh. So many of them crowded against the opposite side of the canoe that the boat listed sharply. Up and down the river, men stared, waiting to see whether Nightshade could save herself by calling out to the water spirits who haunted these muddy banks, or whether the river would swallow her whole. Nightshade's red dress had tangled around her legs, making it difficult for her to move. The curtain of her hair shielded her face, but her shoulders shook, revealing her shame. She felt the canoe rock with a man's unsteady gait. Someone bravely slipped his arms around her and lifted her back into the boat. She stared up into Badgertail's pensive eyes. He studied her for a moment through the frame of his shell-heavy forelocks.
Are you all right? Is it the spirit of Sister Datura?
She always wrestles me from my life.
Is there something I can do?
No. It's between her and me. An old dance. We know each other's steps too well.
Would it help if you lay down?
Nightshade gazed speculatively into that squat face with its 2 large eyes, wondering why he would offer. This was the man who had kidnapped her from her home, dragged her to this foreign land, and offered her up to the malignant arms of the Sun Chief, Theron's father, Gizis.
Yes.
Badgertail put a hand behind her shoulders to help ease her down into the bottom of the canoe, where she could nestle against the hull. Blood speckled his leather boots in dark brown splotches.
It's probably Genos's blood, or Goldenrod's, or...
We're almost home.
Cahokia has never been my home, Badgertail. You know that better than anyone.
He stood quietly before turning and going back to the bow.
Why didn't you go home, Nightshade? When Theron first threw you out of Cahokia, why didn't you return to Talontown? You're such a coward.
I was a child.
She had desperately wanted to go home, but at the age of 14, she had been too afraid to make the long journey by herself, a decision she had never stopped regretting. Talontown's sun-reddened cliffs still danced in her dreams, ethereal, beckoning. Nightshade slitted her eyes. Ahead, the yellow rays of sunset slanted down, striking the temple mound, which rose in the distance like an improbable mountain. It had taken 300 cycles and 15 million baskets of dirt to erect that stunning monument to Mother Earth, and now she had abandoned them.
Yes, of course. First woman refuses to speak to Mother Earth or Father Sun if it will benefit Theron. It's something he's done. You have to find out what. That's why First Woman has locked the entry to the land of the ancestors and barred it with a wall of darkness. You know what Mudhead said. Somebody has to find out and make it right.
I know.
When Nightshade had slammed up against that midnight wall, she had screamed for help, sending out a call to every powerful dreamer in hearing range. But only silence had met her pleas. She'd wallowed there, banging her spiritual fists and crying out for an eternity, until Brother Mudhead had come to tell her that she must return to the world of men to meet Badgertail and go back into Theron's cage. She had begged him to let her see Bulrush for just a moment before she accepted her fate. But Brother Mudhead had told her that First Woman had slipped into her cave and refused to open the underworld to any human.
Theron.
Nightshade tried to smother her dread. He had beaten her repeatedly when they were children, for no reason other than that he was bored with his protected life. Once he had blackened both of her eyes and hit her in the head so hard that her soul had separated from her body for 2 whole days. Her hatred for Theron had fermented over the cycles into a roiling brew of scorn and malice. The canoe veered left to skirt a flotilla of slower-moving rafts heaped with poles that had been cut from the upland ridges 2 days away from Cahokia. With every cycle, people had to roam farther away to find wood. Saplings still sprouted along the riverbanks, but they rarely grew for more than 2 moons before being cut down for building or for cooking. As they rounded the final bend, the river assaulted her with the pungent scents of fish and new plants. Turtles lumbered down the muddy shores to the water. Reeds had resurrected at the edge of the water, shooting green tendrils up through the tawny bones of last cycle's dead plants. Ghostly fear clutched at Nightshade. She shook herself, not understanding.
No. No, my sister, not this.
But the memories gripped her in leaden fists, dragging her back to a time 20 cycles before when warriors had surrounded her on another trip. The images flashed haltingly at first. Then they began to flow, and the scene returned with horrifying power.
Mother! Mother! Help me!
The mad flight from Talontown, being handed from one warrior to the next, being carried for half the night, then forced to run until she thought her heart would burst. She lived again the desperate battles waged as they crossed the land of the swamp people, skulking through slimy water that came up to her chin, the snakes, the biting bugs, the blazing fires that certainly belonged to enemies, the screams of wounded warriors carrying through the hot, muggy nights, the wrenching loneliness. Only Badgertail had talked to her, taught her the language, soothed her at night when the dreams came. He had held her, his the only warm body in a cold and frightening world. Now he had come for her again, still the only kind voice here to comfort her. Nightshade saw the landing loom up through the eyes of a terrified 4 summers-old girl. She huddled in upon herself as the warriors jumped out and tugged the canoe up onto the sand. The gaze fixed on Badgertail, barely seeing the gray strands in his braided forelocks or the lines that now etched deeply around his eyes. He picked up a bloody bundle, rose, and stepped out onto land. As he trudged up the muddy slope to the first terrace, he gestured for 2 of his warriors to bring Nightshade. The men, one very young and the other about 20 summers, leaned over her, trying to coax her into getting up so they wouldn't have to touch her. She peered at them in terror. The young one kicked her lightly in the foot.
No! Please! Please don't make me! Leave me alone! I just want to go home! I want my mother! Take me home! Take me home! Take me home!
Badgertail spun where he stood on the terrace, silhouetted against the dying flames of sunset.
Get away! Leave her alone!
He ran back toward the canoe, slicing through the crowd of warriors that milled on the banks, unloading supplies and gathering belongings. The warriors around Nightshade stumbled out of the boat, and she buried her face in the dirty folds of her red skirt.
Mother! Where are you? Why did you let them take me?
Sister Datura seized images from that forbidden storeroom of Nightshade's soul and flung them against Nightshade's closed eyes, forcing her to remember Badgertail in his youth, tall and commanding, as he had been on the night they had spent at Black Warrior Mounds just below a big river. The village had been abandoned long before, grown over with trees and brush, and it was the first time she had seen spark flies that come out at sunset, glittering through the grass and climbing into the tops of the trees like a brilliant net of fallen stars. Badgertail had buried a warrior in one of the conical mounds. When he knelt before her now, taking up all of her vision, she struggled to crawl away.
Leave me alone! I want my mother! I want to go home! Please take me home!
He reached out, letting his hand hover uncertainly, as if to brush her hair. Then he withdrew it and clenched it into a fist at his side.
Nightshade, I don't know what Sister Datura is doing to you, but...
She saw her mother's face, her mouth gaping open, eyes dusted with sand where she lay, blood drenching her ceremonial dress. She would never go home. Everyone she loved was dead, and only Brother Mudhead cared about her.
Nightshade...
Sister Datura faded back, dancing away to twirl just out of reach. Nightshade swallowed her tears. Badgertail leaned closer. Fear and bewilderment strained his features.
I don't know what to do, Nightshade. Tell me what to do.
Just help me stand up.
He tucked his bloody bundle under one arm and gripped her elbow to support her while she got to her feet. On wobbly legs, she stepped out of the canoe and onto the soft sand. A briar of arrow leaf snagged at her dress as she climbed the steep incline to the first terrace. Warriors shuffled backward, their silent glares as powerful as shouts. From the terrace, Nightshade could see the people tilling the northern fields with chert and clamshell hoes. They'd already started to plant, dropping seed kernels into the long, ridged rows that would sprout four different kinds of corn. Pop, flint, flower, and sweet. Around the fields, blackberry vines twined over ancient stumps, forming a natural fence. The new green leaves stood out against the rich black soil. Nightshade frowned. Between this terrace and the high palisade that surrounded Cahokia, hundreds of new houses dotted the flats between the mounds, their shaggy roofs spreading as far as she could see. Even the spaces between houses had been tilled, and fresh furrows waited for the seeding.
No wonder Mother Earth has abandoned them. How can Theron possibly hope to feed this many people?
They had replanted the fields so many times that the crops never grew very tall anymore, though everything that could be tilled had been tilled. Bluff tops and bases, as well as the broad expanse of rich bottomland. Yet Cahokia never had enough to eat. Not even with the boatloads of tribute that came up the creeks from villages too frightened to refuse Theron's demands. Trade provided exotic items such as dried abalone, hides, copper, and pipestone. But the commonborn immediately exchanged such expendable goods for what food they could get. Only the elite could afford those luxuries now. The spectators were pointing and nodding as the heavy canoes beached, each piled to the gunwale with tribute from river mounds.
Locust, pick 20 warriors. I want them to spread out around Nightshade for the walk into the city. And I'll have no accidents. If any of the commonborn so much as raise a bow, I expect your warriors to kill immediately.
Badgertail came to stand at Nightshade's side, glancing at her uneasily as warriors formed around them in an irregular diamond with Locust in the front. The group began moving, cutting a swath through loops of warriors to the main pathway that led into the city. Nightshade felt desperately tired. With every ounce of strength remaining, she forced her feet to plod forward. A pack of dogs careened up the trail to greet them, wagging tails, vanguard for the horde of children that followed. The children peered at Nightshade like hunting weasels.
Who is she, Locust? Why have you brought her?
Where are you taking her? Did you catch her in the battle at River Mounds? Is she a sacrifice?
A girl of about 14 summers ducked low to peer around the warrior's legs, her eyes opened wide.
It's Nightshade! Run! Run!
And the children scattered like a school of fish at a thrown rock, racing away to shout the news. It seemed only moments before a crowd had gathered along the route. Even the old and sick were hefted onto shoulders and carried out to watch the spectacle of Nightshade's return to Cahokia.
Stay close to me.
I've nowhere else to go.
Nightshade noticed that he had taken his chert-studded war club from his belt before they even reached the storehouses. The ring of carved and painted cedar posts forming the sky circle appeared on her left. Old Marmot had been adamant about charting the exact courses of Father Sun, Moon Maiden, and the Star Ogres, so that he could determine the correct days for planting and harvesting, as well as the great ceremonials and other things. Marmot had believed that if you could chart the sacred dance of the sky gods, Birdman would help you decipher all of the mysteries of light and dark in creation. Legends said that Birdman had been evil in life, that he'd fought a devastating war against Wolfslayer and been condemned after his death to helping humans stay on the path of light and harmony. Part of his duty was to carry messages between humans and the sky gods and the underworld. Nightshade bitterly recalled the winter nights when Old Marmot had forced her to sit in the freezing cold, waiting for Father Sun to climb over the temple mound so he could pinpoint the position on the leather sky map that he guarded with his life. He had been keeping that map for 40 summers before Nightshade's arrival. With it, a priestess or a priest could chart the precise path of the sky gods on any given night during a period of 19 cycles.
Oh, look! It is Nightshade! Oh, blessed Mother Earth, why is she back?
Nightshade turned to see an old woman with gray hair fleeing through the crowd, running with all of her strength. People surged in to fill the old woman's place, but Nightshade peered after her.
Checkerberry?
The old woman had taken care of her in the first cycle of her life in Cahokia, but perhaps it hadn't been. Nightshade hadn't known many of the common born. Old Marmot had forbidden it, saying she hadn't time for the lowly tillers of the fields, the makers of crude pots and ugly arrow points. The only common born she had been acquainted with had been the clan leaders, or the privileged artisans paid by Gizis himself, the flintknappers of special points and axe heads, the stone grinders who polished celts, hand maces, and effigy pipes, certain gifted potters, and the shellbead workers who produced almost all of the necklaces, ear spools, and bracelets worn by the elite in the city.
Locust, we'll enter the outer palisade through the west gate.
Badgertail motioned with his hand to the left, indicating that they should take the narrow path that led around the base of the westernmost charnel mound. Here, the houses and storage buildings gave way to open space. Locust veered away from the houses of the common born to skirt the small plaza before the charnel mound. A few rocks flew into their procession, but Nightshade paid no attention. Her nose had picked up the sickly sweet odor of the dead. In the big house on the mound, the Starborn kept the bodies of important people while they prepared them for burial by dressing them in fine clothing, painting their faces in scarlet pigments, and rubbing their flesh with a precious mixture of sacred cedar bark and hickory oil. On the hottest days of summer, the stench became overwhelming, forcing people to drape their sleeves over their noses as they passed. Old Marmot used to tell her that Mother Earth found the odor of death pleasing, and that Nightshade, as an adopted member of the Starborn, should too. But she could never manage it. She recalled running more than once out of the charnel house to vomit.
Badgertail, who died?
Farron will tell you.
The great palisade appeared before them, tall, white, made of upright logs daubed with clay before fire hardening. The walls towered 25 hands high and guarded the ceremonial centers and the houses of the Sunborn, Starborn, and other elite. Warriors manned the shooting platforms. Behind them, the tops of several mounds thrust up squarely against the purpling sky. her gaze fixed on the tallest mound and its giant temple that seemed to slice Father Sky's belly. The building even dwarfed the high spirit pole, made of the tallest tree that had ever been found and carved in the likeness of Birdman. Theron would be waiting there, dressed in his finest clothing, wearing a magnificent headdress. Everything would be orchestrated for appearance and effect. From this angle, the great temple glimmered with a brazen glory. How well she remembered that huge building. It spread in a 1,000-hand square and rose 100 hands high, towering over everything and everyone. She could make out the carved effigies of eagle, deer, and rattlesnake that perched atop the temple's high ridgepole. Even from here, she could see that they needed painting. The slate-blue gleam of dusk played like whips of fire in the copper amulets that adorned the monumental building's grass roof and walls. The lake's people in the north exchanged nuggets of copper for chert hoe blades. Theron's metal workers pounded the copper into thin sheets and turned them into jewelry and ornaments. The huge mound and its stunning temple took a person's breath. All the power in the world might have been here. For a single breath, she saw the temple through the eyes of the girl she had been 20 cycles ago, and it terrified her all over again.
Oh, Bulrush, what's happened to me? My blood has gone as weak as an old woman's. I can't seem to face anything without you.
Nightshade squeezed her eyes closed to bolster her courage. When she opened them, she found Badgertail giving her a curious sideways glance.
Does he know? Can he guess my anguish at walking this path as a captive for the second time in my life?
He hung his war club back on his belt and lifted a hand to signal the guards over the gate. While men scurried to obey, Badgertail took Nightshade's arm, leading her forward as his warriors regrouped into a crescent moon around them. The crowd pressed as close as it could, standing on tiptoes to get a glimpse of the sacred space enclosed within the palisades, perhaps hoping to see the Sun Chief himself. The log gate slid back, revealing an L-shaped entryway. Badgertail clutched Geno's head beneath his left arm as he pushed Nightshade through the entry, then waited while the warriors closed the gate. The beauty here eased something weary in his soul. Gardens encircled the bases of the mounds in pale green fringes, while wreaths of smoke hovered near the summits. The flickering glare from cook fires reflected on the smoke in ruddy patches. Nightshade shook off Badgertail's restraining hand, and he met her eyes. They seemed to swirl and tug at a man, pulling him down into dark, frightening depths. When he couldn't bear it any longer, he let his gaze rise over the tangled mass of her still damp hair and shift to the gatekeeper.
Southwind, how is everything here?
The short, stocky warrior gestured noncommittally. His clean war shirt hung to his knees and sported the face of a fox on the chest.
As well as can be expected after the events of last week. People have been staying inside for the most part, afraid to come out.
Badgertail nodded solemnly. He could feel it. He had been gone for 2 days, but the pall hadn't lifted. The city huddled under a smothering blanket of quiet. No one walked the winding paths through the 18 mounds inside the palisades, though he could see the orange gleams of fireballs lighting the houses on the crests of the mounds.
Where's the Sun Chief?
In the temple.
Southwind's hand crept to his knife.
In the temple, Badgertail. We thought he would have his guards carry him down here on his litter, but he's been waiting there for you all day.
Thank you, my friend. Go back to your platform. We'll talk more in the morning.
Badgertail turned back to Nightshade. She stood glaring at the stairs that rose up the front of the temple mound. Made of polished cedar logs, they shone with a reddish tinge in the fading light. Badgertail shifted uneasily, giving her time to sort through what must have been a haunting mixture of memories. Little had changed in the time she had been gone. A few more mounds had been completed. 3 more ponds had welled in the holes excavated to fill the necessary baskets of dirt. But not much else was different, except that Badgertail now had a house on a small mound on the east side of the temple. Involuntarily, he tried to peer through the earthen wall to see it. Oh, how he would love to be coming home with Bobcat to sit before the fire and sip anise tea while they discussed the insanity of the past cycle. There was no one he could talk to now. No one he could confide in. He squinted at the sky. The most powerful of the Star Ogres had awakened. Wolf Pup's long nose dipped down to sniff at the peak of the temple, while his tail brushed the noose around Hanged Woman's neck.
The cage is locked, Badgertail. Can you untie me now?
Of course.
He slipped a flake of pale chert from a pouch on his belt and cut the cord that bound her hands. Nightshade winced as she rubbed her wrists. When she had the blood going again, she rested her palms on the painted bundle tied to her belt, touching it almost apologetically.
You remember the way?
I've walked this path 1,000 times in my nightmares. I don't think I'll ever be able to forget it.
She strode purposefully along the dirt trail that led to the base of the stairs. There she paused for the briefest of instants to wet her lips before climbing. Badgertail silently followed her. As they ascended, the magnificence of the city emerged. 120 mounds rose from the flat river bottom, speckling the land like gigantic anthills. Wide plazas and small thatched roof houses filled the spaces in between, interrupted only by the winding traces of creeks and the glistening dots of ponds. Everywhere, fires glowed. They passed the first terrace, and Badgertail glanced at the small temple on the southwest corner. The structure rested on a platform, and from the center, a man could look out over the city at morning or at night and tell what day of the cycle it was. For the entire Cahokia complex had been laid out as a 365-day calendar. When they reached the highest terrace of the mound, 200 hands above the floodplain, and stood before the door and the final palisade, Nightshade was clearly struggling, though Badgertail could not be sure how much of her effort came from exhaustion.
It is War Leader Badgertail. I come according to the Sun Chief's orders, and I bear him good news. All that I was ordered, I have done.
From the corner of Badgertail's eye, he noticed a shiver rack Nightshade as she stepped inside the final courtyard. The giant temple rose before them, blotting away the night sky.
Where does this sense of rot and corruption come from? You're uneasy. It comes from the presence of Nightshade so soon after Bobcat's death. That's all.
To one side, the huge effigy pole of Birdman rested like an arrow pointed into the sky. Around the base of the giant shaft was placed a ring of offerings. Several lengths of colored cloth had been tied around the girth, each bearing a message to Birdman. Badgertail averted his eyes as he grabbed Nightshade's hand and hurried forward, almost pulling her off her feet. At the doorway to the temple, Nightshade jerked loose and stopped. Badgertail could see her knees trembling beneath the red fabric of her dress.
The Sun Chief is waiting. Can you make it, or would you like help?
I have obligations to the gods, kidnapper. I'll manage.
Hi-ya, hi-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya.
Then she bowed to the six sacred persons. Badgertail lifted the door hanging out of the way so she could enter the main hallway, then ducked through after her into the warm radiance. The temple was an intricate maze of light and shadow. 12 corridors intersected this main one, 6 coming in from each side, creating blots of darkness in the halo cast by the firebowls that sat at the bases of the walls. The spiced hickory oil they burned sent a fragrant current through the temple. 6 red door hangings shielded the rooms of the Blessed Starborn, who inhabited this foremost section of the temple. They walked side by side past the spectacular wall paintings of Birdman, Spider, Rattlesnake, Wolf, the Eye in the Hand, Wood Duck, Woodpecker, and all the others. Carved faces of Theron's ancestors had been placed along the route, their old eyes watchful.
Have their expressions always been so distasteful? Or have the carvings begun to change?
Every so often, Nightshade would lift her hand to smooth her fingers over one of the wall figures, usually that of a serpent or a spiral. Affectionately, she patted the faces of Grandfather Brown Bear and First Woman. The tenderness of the gesture made Badgertail wonder whether she hadn't painted some of those hallowed images herself a very long time ago in another life. Nightshade bowed again when she reached the entry to the Great Sun Chamber. The laughter was clearly Theron's. The cries, likely those of Theron's 9 summers-old daughter, Orenda. An odd child, she seemed to cry constantly. Nightshade flinched. She threw Badgertail a dull glare before she squared her shoulders and stepped into the brilliance beyond. Her steps did not even slow as she strode to stand directly in front of the raised altar where Theron lounged insolently over the sacred pedestal. The 12 sacred fires cast yellow light on the wealth of Cahokia. A radiance shone on polished sheets of worked copperplate, on exquisite wooden statues and masks painted in glossy colors, on nacre conch shell and endless strings of shell beads. The finest pottery in the world circled the room, the pieces decorated with incised swirls, punctations, or effigies, the best pearlescent and shining. Beautiful fabrics, each dyed in a brilliant color and bearing a complex design woven in contrast, covered the walls and floor.
Theron, I see you've changed very little. You're still blaspheming the gods.
So, you're here at last.
Over 12 hands tall, Theron had the triangular face and sharp nose of a bat. Red concentric circles tattooed his cheeks, the lines running all the way to the copper ear spools dangling from his lobes. He looked irritable and tired tonight. Indigo smudges of exhaustion darkened the puffy flesh beneath his brown eyes, accentuating the prominence of his cheekbones. A headdress of bright yellow tanager feathers caged the black coils of hair piled on top of his head. Mica beads, the stone from their local quarries fashioned by Theron's artisans, encircled his hem and collar, glittering wildly with his every move. Galena bracelets and anklets covered his arms and legs. Any other man so ostentatiously attired and bejeweled would have been thought contemptibly effeminate, but not the Great Sun Chief. Theron fumbled for his hand spike, then tapped it irritatingly against the pedestal. The spike, a stylized war club, was sculpted from the finest white chert. It served as his symbol of office. It flared at the top and narrowed to a point. He apparently gained the courage to speak again, but as he opened his mouth, Nightshade turned away to the tortoise bundle, which sat on a tiny table at the edge of the altar. Its red, yellow, blue, and white spirals had faded to near nothingness, as though untended for cycles. The hand that Nightshade extended to stroke it trembled. Badgertail walked between 2 of the 12 spokes of fireballs that radiated out from the raised altar. The bowl's artist had sculpted the clay so that a variety of birds' heads rose above the lips of the vessels. Eagles, falcons, and occasionally the head of a dove appeared. Father Sun had created birds to serve as assistants to Birdman, carrying messages between humans and other types of beings. Legend foretold that if any of the bowls in this sacred chamber ever went out, Father Sun would flare and the world would die.
Oh!
Theron dropped his handspike, trotted down the 3 steps from the altar, and ran across the floor, jumping up and down like a 5 summers-old boy. His eagle feather cape fluttered extravagantly.
Oh, Badgertail, I'm so glad to see you! What did you bring me? Where is it? Where is it?
He scrambled around Badgertail, touching his war shirt and boots. Badgertail lifted his arms, the way he always did, to let Theron search him.
Oh, I know you have something. What did you bring me? Give it to me. I can't wait.
Badgertail drew the amethyst and shell necklace from his belt, and Theron's eyes widened. He grasped the necklace and took a step backward.
Oh, it's magnificent. Thank you. Thank you, faithful Badgertail. Here, put it on me.
Theron gave it back, and Badgertail kissed the necklace before cautiously draping it over Theron's head. Great care had to be taken, since the Great Sun Chief's moods could change as rapidly as the clouds. The slightest touch in the wrong place or the merest tone of voice could throw him into a lethal rage.
There, my chief.
Theron ambled back toward the altar, fingering his gift appreciatively as he climbed the steps. On the far western side of the chamber, Orenda sat cross-legged, watching her father intently. Six members of the Starborn stood behind her, men and women, each young and dressed in a bright scarlet robe. Badgertail knew the six, but not well. They were the eldest sons and daughters of the victims of last week's mad murders. At least they had siblings to comfort their grief, unlike Orenda, who was an only child. In a semicircle around them lay an array of power objects. 11 power bundles, several eagle feather prayer fans, a necklace of perfectly round white stones, an amethyst bracelet, owl talon headdresses, and elaborately beaded moccasins. Nightshade was looking at the objects, too. Her gaze rested on one particular power bundle, a curious fat-bodied creature without legs and a long, flat tail painted in gray on the outside. She cocked her head as if she heard muted voices coming from it. Badgertail cautiously spread his hands.
My chief, aren't you forgetting something?
Forgetting?
Badgertail mouthed the words, the drink.
Oh! Yes! War leader Badgertail and the great Nightshade have come! Bring us the holy white drink!
One of the Sunborn, a young man, slipped into the back. Nightshade seemed unaware of the awkward silence, her attention rapt as she stared sightlessly at the bundle. The young man returned, walking in slow, measured steps, a huge, beautifully etched conch-shell cup in his hands. The word white referred to the purity of the beverage, not to its color, for that was a deep black. Only as he came close did Badgertail notice the trembling in the youth's hands and the tense set of his jaw. Theron took the offered bowl and drank deeply before handing it back, a preoccupied frown tightening his face. The youth approached Badgertail, who accepted the cup with two hands and admired the etchings on it, interlinked figures of rattlesnake that formed a cross, their tails bending off to the left in right angles. The bitter black brew was tepid and oily. Nagging unease ate at him. The drink, properly served, could have been poured over a finger without scalding it, but just barely. He returned the heavy bowl to the youth, who gave it to Nightshade. She absently took the shell. A light had kindled in her eye when she finally handed the bowl back. One by one, the others drank, and the youth retreated with the vessel. Ceremony observed, Badgertail knelt before the pedestal.
Blessed Theron, great Sun Chief, we have returned in triumph. Your tribute is being unloaded as we speak.
He cautiously placed Geno's head on the altar at Theron's feet.
And I have brought the head of your cursed enemy, as you demanded.
Theron wet his lips, as if frightened by that fact. He tugged at his necklace.
Did you? I'm surprised, I thought. Well, I'd no idea my cousin would have the courage to face you. Unwrap it.
Badgertail untied the ends of the stiff golden fabric and peeled the blood-caked cloth back to reveal Geno's face, hideously distorted by the tight folds that had bound it. The crescent moons tattooing the cheeks had shriveled to black pits, but the eyes were glaring defiantly.
The fool, he should have known better than to oppose me. Did he die well, Badgertail?
He died bravely.
You forced his son, what's his name, to watch?
Pataga, yes.
Well, Genos deserved it. He shouldn't have opposed me. His son will know better. Yes, the boy will obey now, just like everyone else. Won't he, Badgertail?
Yes, my chief.
Theron's eagle feather cape swayed around his legs as he stepped away from the pedestal to look at Nightshade, whose stunned eyes had focused unblinking on Geno's.
So, you are mine again, Nightshade. Seems I can cast you away or drag you back at my whim.
It was hardly you who dragged me back, Theron,
But your whims are certainly the reason I'm here. So you killed old Marmot. What?
You liar! How dare you suggest such a thing?
It wasn't a suggestion. And I doubt very much that Marmot's power bundle would lie to me. It was there, after all, when he stumbled back into his room after you poisoned him.
Badgertail rose to his feet so fast that he tripped over his own boot and had to grab the altar to keep from falling. Nightshade's demeanor had changed dramatically. It was hard to believe this was the same woman who had lain sobbing like a child only a short time ago. Power now emanated from her, adding a sensual fluidity to her movements.
What did Marmot find out, Theron? What is it you've done to anger the gods so much that they've abandoned us?
Theron leaned on the sacred pedestal and picked up his handspike, lifting it as if to wrap it, but he didn't. His mouth puckered into a pout. For a long time, he stood absolutely still, studying her.
Do you know that old Marmot believed you were a witch? He said that you were breathing death into the well pots. I could have you killed on that suspicion, you know. Everyone would approve.
I'm the only one left who can breathe life into the pots, Theron. Kill me, and you'll cut yourself off from the underworld forever. And without First Woman's guidance, you'll doom your people to oblivion.
Theron slammed his spike down onto the pedestal.
You are already doomed! Look at what's happened to us! Mother Earth refuses to grow trees! First Woman won't send rain, and when she does, the floods kill our crops!
He flung his spike across the room. It hit a fireball and tumbled end over end until it struck the wall. One of the Starborn, a homely young woman named Kettle, flinched as oil trickled out of the bowl. She ran to grab another off the altar and replace the cracked one. Kettle must have become the new fireball tender. If so, she would never set foot outside the temple, forever monitoring the Sun Chamber's bowls to assure that nothing snuffed their light. Theron watched her with disgust on his triangular face.
Enough! Bring me my handspike!
Kettle finished replacing the bowl and carefully shifted the wick before she scampered to return the spike. She bowed as she handed it up to Theron. He jerked it from her fingers.
Now go back to your place with my child.
Yes, my chief.
She ran back to the western side of the chamber. Theron toyed with his spike, tapping it into his palm before he gained the courage to descend the altar steps and approach Nightshade. She watched him silently as he circled her, a speculative quirk to his mouth.
I had no idea you'd grown up into such a beautiful woman. I've heard that your power has grown by equal bounds. Do you know what I did for you? I had your old room prepared!
Why did you order me brought back here, Theron?
Well, we grew up together, you and I. Remember when you taught me how to make grass bracelets?
I remember.
And remember when you taught me the steps to the spring corn dance that your people used to do?
Yes.
Badgertail cocked his head. It was curious that he had never considered the probability that Nightshade and Theron had been friends. He had never thought of anyone as being Theron's friend, but Theron had been 8 when Badgertail had brought Nightshade to Cahokia. She had been 4. Both of them babies, both lonely. Of course they would have sought out each other.
I wanted you here, Nightshade. I'm sorry I banished you 10 cycles ago, but you made me so angry when you beat me in that junky game. Maybe we could be friends again. You could breathe life into the well pots and talk to the spirits, and I'll rule the land. Would that be all right? What do you think, huh?
Theron, answer me. Why did you kill Marmot? Did he find out what you'd done to turn First Woman against us?
Nightshade!
Theron's hand shot out to snatch a handful of her dark, tangled hair. He yanked her face up to within a hand's breadth of his own.
Don't ever ask me that again. Do you understand?
Let me go, Theron. Or shall I call out to the hundreds of spirits who inhabit the power objects you've stolen? They won't be as gentle with you as I will. They'll gladly eat your soul.
Badgertail's muscles tightened. For several moments, no one moved. And then something subtle changed in the room. As if the ice giants had strode back into this world, bringing glacial cold with them, Badgertail shivered. The light started to spin in little whirlpools at the edges of his vision. He could almost see power seeping out of the bundles to infuse the golden glow that pervaded the room. He took a step forward.
Don't threaten me, Nightshade. You don't ever threaten me. I'm the Sun Chief. You have to obey me. That's all you have to do.
I won't obey a fool, Theron.
Theron raised a fist over his head, poised to strike. Badgertail broke into a run. Nightshade hunched down as the blow descended, and Badgertail caught Theron's fist in mid-swing, holding it tightly against his blood-soaked war shirt.
Don't do this, my chief. You're tired. Get some rest and think before you do something you'll regret. You know that Nightshade doesn't deserve this kind of treatment.
Firelight sparkled on the beads of sweat that trickled down Theron's throat.
Oh, yes, you're right, Badgertail. I'm just worn out. And it's been a terrible week.
Badgertail released Theron's hand and backed away.
No one sees Riley when he's tired. With your permission, I'll escort Nightshade to her room so that you can rest.
Theron gritted his teeth and gave his daughter a look that would have melted snow. Orenda buried her face in her little hands. Theron wiped his mouth with the back of his hand as he stared at Nightshade.
Go ahead, Badgertail. Take Nightshade to her chamber. Go on. Take her away.
Badgertail quickly ushered Nightshade from the sun chamber into the dimness of the hall. In the living quarters around the chamber, firebowls glowed only at the intersections of the corridors, leaving most of the temple ominously dark. They walked in silence until they reached the correct passageway and turned left. Badgertail inhaled the first easy breath of the night when he stopped before the door to her old room.
Nightshade.
You're not planning on defending him to me, are you? Don't make pretenses with me. You hate him just as much as everyone else does.
Yes, perhaps. But you must understand that he's lost his wife and 11 friends in the past 7 days. He's
murdered old Marmot, Badgertail. I don't know why, but I must find out. If someone doesn't heal the wound that Theron's ripped in the soul of First Woman, she'll never speak for us again, and Mother Earth will let us all die.
The wild glow of Sister Datura had faded from her powerful gaze, replaced now by something softer and a little frightened. Grief had once more imprinted its tracks on her beautiful face, tightening around her mouth. Badgertail straightened up and bowed slightly.
Have a good rest, Nightshade. We'll see each other again.
Badgertail started down the hall, anxious to leave so that he could go to Bobcat's home and tell Moonseed the things he must. Already his ears rang with her cries.
Badgertail?
Yes?
Bobcat wanted me to tell you that he forgives you.
For what?
For not leaving when you had the chance.
She pulled back the door hanging and vanished into the darkness of her room. The hanging swung erratically, revealing glimpses of her red dress. Badgertail braced his hand against the cedar wall as memories of his brother swept over him.
Tell Bobcat, I'm sorry.
Prina shoved her way through the crowd. Her child-heavy body made maneuvering difficult.
Hunt! Hunt, what is it?
Her breath had begun to cloud as the air cooled with the coming of night. Green Ash broke out of a thick knot of people and rounded one of the houses, stepping carefully to avoid freshly turned rows of soil where someone had started a small garden. Finally, Green Ash caught sight of her aunt. Checkerberry ran through the lavender veil of dusk. People made a small path for her, barely glancing as she rushed by. Everyone's eyes were still fixed on Badgertail's warriors, who lounged haughtily outside the palisade. Green Ash followed and turned the corner at the end of a thatched wall. Ahead, Checkerberry, gray hair tumbling over her withered face, had fallen to her knees to scramble into her house.
Aunt?
Green Ash put a hand on her protruding belly and crawled through behind Checkerberry. The house consisted of one room, 20 hands by 15. As the powerful and respected leader of the Blue Blanket Clan, Checkerberry's house reflected her status. Sacred masks of the gods covered the walls, glinting with copper and shell inlays. A ladder led up the left wall to a narrow platform that served as a bed. It sat close to the juncture of the roof and wall, where a slit allowed the breezes to repel the smoke from the fire pit. Green Ash blinked in the near darkness. Finally, she spied Checkerberry in the rear, hunched in a pile of blankets, and jerking spastically at a banded red, blue, and tan blanket, attempting to cover her face. When she had tugged the blanket into place, she sat trembling, only one eye showing. Green Ash extended a hand.
Aunt, are you all right?
She's come back.
If it was her.
Evil walks with her. Couldn't you feel it?
Well, even if it was Nightshade, what difference?
Difference? She killed my entire family. My poor little Hopley. Oh, Hopley.
Green Ash closed her hands on air. She hadn't even been born then, but she knew the old stories about how the great Gizis had chosen Checkerberry, respected and renowned even then, to teach Nightshade the ways of her new people. Less than 2 moons after Checkerberry had taken on the task, her husband had perished in an accident while hunting. Within the cycle, all 3 of her children had died one by one from strange fevers. Checkerberry's soul had come unhinged. She had never been quite right since.
Oh, my niece. She was bound and surrounded by guards. She didn't return of her own free will. We're doomed. There'll be no more rains. The crops will wither in the fields.
Green Ash edged forward until she could touch Checkerberry's knee gently.
No, they won't, Aunt. You know that First Woman will protect us. She...
Nightshade is more powerful than First Woman. She'll throw corpse powder on us and kill us all. She's a witch. Wait. You'll see.
Lycan scrambled up the gritty rock outcrop that encircled half of Redweed Village. Flycatcher and 2 other boys climbed above her with the agility and speed of frightened pack rats. The dirt cascading beneath their sandals spattered her like hailstones. A smoky film had already built up on her red and tan skirt. Lycan wiped gravel from her mouth and climbed faster. On the banks of Pumpkin Creek, 50 hands below, people raced around the central plaza, preparing for the beauty way ceremony at nightfall. 15 houses with shaggy thatched roofs framed the plaza in a long rectangle. Turtle and bluegill lay naked on drying racks before them, their sweet flesh desiccating in the bright afternoon sun. Farther out, at the edge of the village, storage huts sat on raised poles. Beneath a hut near the bend of the creek, a raccoon struggled, trying to climb one of the greased poles and reach the rich supply of corn inside. It jumped valiantly, attempting to sink its claws into the wood, and scratched wildly at the bear grease before toppling backward to land in a soft bed of knotweed. The raccoon, realizing its chances of winding up in that selfsame storage building, albeit skinned, gutted, and dried for someone's supper, bolted in a ring-tailed streak for the low brush and a longer life. Flycatcher waved impatiently from the top of the outcrop. His shoulder-length black hair glistened with sweat.
Hurry up, Lycan! We're going!
Screech Owl, the biggest boy in the village and meaner than a mating mink, propped his fists on his hips and sneered over the edge at Lycan. He'd broken his nose as a baby, and it still zigzagged as sharply as a lightning bolt. He had small, dark eyes and a mouth like a catfish's, but his shoulders spread as wide as a man's, and he was barely 11 summers. He scared Lycan half to death.
Come on, girl! Let's leave her. She can't keep up.
I'm coming, Flycatcher! I'm coming!
She slid her knee onto a ledge and dug her fingers into the crevice above, pulling up frantically. The cracked stone gave way, coming off in her hand, and she slipped and fell, landing hard on a lower ledge. She grabbed at the rock to keep from falling all the way and managed to hook her thumbs into a weathered hole. Blood trickled warmly from a scraped knee. She bit her lip to drive back the hurt and tackled the rock face again, climbing until she could slither over the top of the last shelf. Lycan rolled over to catch her breath. Sand stuck to her bare, sweaty back in itchy patches. She scratched at them while she studied the clouds that brushed the turquoise sky in long streamers, sweeping southward toward the great villages that lined the Father Water. She turned onto her stomach, the boys huddled together, shoulder to shoulder, behind an upright boulder in the distance. They butted each other playfully as they fought for the best position. Lycan got up and trotted after them, but her steps faltered when she realized where they were. They must be looking down on the dressing area of the masked dancers, who would conjure beauty from the earth and plants in tonight's ceremonial. She bent low and sneaked up on cougar silent feet to see what occupied them so thoroughly. In the grassy space at the rear of the temple, two women stood naked, painting each other's breasts with bright red ochre. The spirals fanned out from their nipples to blossom in the center of their chests as majestic images of Thunderbird in flight. His wings swept up in a rounded arc until the tips of the feathers connected with the dancer's earlobes. Lycan lifted a brow at the boys.
You turkey brains! Do you want to ruin the ceremony? You know nobody's supposed to see the dancers until they come out of the temple tonight. You're bringing bad luck. Terrible things could happen.
Flycatcher shrugged in shame and slid backward on his hands and knees. But Screech Owl grabbed him by the thongs on his breech clout and hauled him back. Flycatcher chopped at the bigger boy's meaty hand.
Quit that, Screech Owl! Let me go! Well, what are you doing listening to a girl? What does she know?
A lot more than you do, ugly boy. At least about ritual. My mother's the keeper of the stone wolf.
So what? She doesn't have any power. My father says she's the keeper just because some old man named Left Hand got the wolf a million cycles ago and said only his family could take care of it. That's stupid. I bet my father could take care of it a lot better than your mother does. He's the great, great, great...
He waved his hand to indicate a bunch of greats.
Grandson of First Woman herself.
That's stupid. Nobody's the relative of First Woman. My mother knows all the sacred stories. What does your father know about the emergence from the underworld in the beginning time? Or about Wolfslayer's battle with his dark brother, the Birdman? Nothing, I'll bet.
Screech Owl got to his feet. He threw his huge shoulders back and stalked toward Lycan like Grandfather Brown Bear walking on his hind legs. She ran. Her skinned knee told her in no uncertain terms how bad an idea that was. Her leg got weaker with every step, and Screech Owl's long gait was rapidly closing the gap between them. Lycan forced her knee to work even harder. She jumped a squat pawpaw bush to reach the trail that led to the village. Her knee gave way. She tumbled ankles over snarled hair to land hard at the base of a pile of boulders. Screech Owl dove for her. Lycan somehow scooted out of his way, rolled to her feet, and stood with her jaw thrust out and her fists up.
Stop it, Screech Owl, or I'll break your nose again!
Flycatcher and young Wart raced up as Screech Owl kicked Lycan in her sore knee. When she screamed, he grabbed her hand.
Now I've got you. You'll never be talking bad about my father again!
He swung his clenched fist at her cheek. Lycan ducked and rammed her head into his stomach, then sank her teeth into his side. Screech Owl caught himself and straightened up. Lycan threw herself backward to break his rawhide grip.
Come on! Let's get her!
Flycatcher stood dumbly, casting covert glances at Lycan, while Wart jumped from foot to foot, waiting for somebody, anybody, to tell him what to do. Only 7. He didn't have much sense yet. He didn't have much chin, either. Just doe eyes and a forehead that took up most of his face.
Flycatcher! You're my best friend!
I know it!
But he made no move.
Your best friend's a girl! You got the testicles of a worm! Come on, Wart, help me get her!
Wart gritted his teeth so hard in indecision that his head shook. Finally, on the verge of bursting from sheer lack of action, he yielded and ran to Screech Owl's side. Lycan almost lost control of her bladder. She glared at Flycatcher, trying to look fierce, but knowing that her expression quickly changed to pleading.
Flycatcher, your grandmother was my great ancestor!
His eyes darted calculatingly over the clouds, apparently trying to remember if that was right. Then he grudgingly nodded and trotted to stand beside her.
Don't shove my cousin around!
Screech Owl hunkered down, spreading his arms like falcon ready to soar into the sky.
All right, we're coming!
Wart scampered to follow Screech Owl's lead as he lunged for Flycatcher. Flycatcher brought up his foot, catching Screech Owl in the shoulder, but he only succeeded in throwing himself off balance so that Screech Owl could slam a fist into his butt and knock him flat. Flycatcher sprawled across the gray stone like a dead spider. Lycan hopped around anxiously, trying to figure out how to protect herself from Wart's attack. He flew at her, his mouth wide open, so she took her fist and jammed it down that black hole. Lycan stared at her bloody knuckles, shook them to fight the pain, and spun to face Screech Owl, who had managed to drive Flycatcher at least 10 paces up the slope. Screech Owl's lips twitched as he turned to face her. In a stroke of genius, she pointed at the sky.
Don't do it, Screech Owl! Birdman is my spirit helper! If you hurt me, I'll call out to him and he'll come and carry you up to the stars before he drops you on Redweed Village!
Ha 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 ha!
Screech Owl sauntered forward menacingly, but Lycan refused to give ground. She grabbed up a rock and stood with her knees trembling.
It's probably a good day to die.
As his shadow fell over her in a cool wash, Lycan's throat traitorously contemplated screaming again, but before the sound could clear her lips, a large rock plunged out of the blue and smacked Screech Owl in the ear.
What the?
He staggered backward. A tall figure wearing a raven mask rose with ghostly stealth from behind one of the rocks up the slope. Black feathers sleeked down over its face and formed a ruff around its neck. Its huge wooden beak slowly creaked open, showing glimpses of a puckered mouth beneath.
Caw, caw!
Screech Owl stood petrified.
Caw!
In a flash, the figure swooped down the slope, holding out the woven edges of its rabbit fur cape like wings. Screech Owl flew down the path toward the village, Wart stumbling behind him. Lycan and Flycatcher grabbed each other in terror as the figure turned and propped age-spotted hands on bony hips.
Lycan, you should stay away from Screech Owl. He's got bad blood. Did you know his grandmother used to suck toad eyes for fun? She kept a bat rolling around in her cheeks all day long. I never did like her.
One hand reached up and tugged off the mask, revealing a face painted with alternating stripes of red, yellow, and blue. A single black spot covered the middle of the forehead. Lycan pushed Flycatcher from her to grab the old man around the right leg.
Wander! When did you get here? I thought you would wait until nightfall, when people couldn't see you so well.
No, I came early to talk to the rocks.
Lycan exchanged a prudent look with Flycatcher.
What for?
Why, to hear stories about the beginning of the world. Come on, I'll show you.
He spun in a whirl of glistening rabbit fur and tramped back up the slope. Lycan followed in his moccasin prints, taking 2 steps for each one of Wanderers. When she reached the highest cluster of rocks where Wanderer crouched, she turned to speak to Flycatcher, but the space behind her was empty. She stretched her neck and saw him dashing down the trail in the distance, his short legs pumping as fast as they could.
I guess he didn't want to talk to the rocks.
Oh, most people don't. It's a curious prejudice. They'll talk to themselves with no hesitation, but when it comes to communicating with higher spiritual forms, they go deaf and dumb. Come over here, Lycan.
Let me show you this.
He ducked low and wiggled through a wide crack between the rocks that led into a sort of cave, then extended a hand to her. Lycan tucked her fingers in his and allowed him to pull her into the darkness.